The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, coming to you live this time from our Edmund studio down in the cellar of beautiful Edstone Hall that ran into a little bit of trouble this morning with some unexpected flooding in the kitchen downstairs, thanks to an Edstone rodent of some kind that chewed through a hose at the back of a dishwasher. So we're in the process of drying all that out. And getting back into the Edstone routine here in the West Midlands. It's great to be back in the studio here. They've put together quite a few upgrades down in the studio, down in the cellar, down in the basement. We've got a nice screen now that shows me all the clips that we have available for these particular broadcasts. Richard Palmer, along with Sam Livingston, have been putting in some extra time, just taking advantage of my being away to spruce things up here a little bit in the Edstone studio. If we keep making these improvements, people out there might be, they might be under the impression we actually know what we're doing, Sam. So be careful not to make it too professional. In any event, lots of news that's been piling up the last couple of days. I've been traveling, and Richard Palmer, of course, sat in for me on yesterday's program. If you'd like to hear that podcast, it's available at thetrumpet.com and also at kpcg.fm. I was reading a little bit more last night and this morning about this hate crime in Chicago. I guess it happened on Tuesday night. It started to make the news on Wednesday, and it's picked up a little bit of steam here in the last couple of days, thanks mainly to conservative media outlets, because sadly, the initial coverage, it was either downplayed or ignored, and really a shocking event there in Chicago with these four black teens torturing this white handicapped youth, a teenager who was struggling with some handicap of some sort. And here they were forcing this young white man to curse Donald Trump, to drink from a toilet, of all things. And all the while, the criminals yelling in the background about how much they hated Trump, about how much they hated white people. And all of this out there in the open, broadcasted live on Facebook, at least 30 minutes of it or so. And in this video, the victims repeatedly kicked at and punched. His scalp was cut and his mouth taped shut. Just a horrific crime.
It's sickening. It's sickening. You know, it makes you wonder what would make individuals treat somebody like that.
That's from Superintendent Eddie Johnson of the Chicago Police Department. The Associate, I mentioned how some of the coverage initially downplayed the severity of the hate crime. This is from the Associated Press, I think late Tuesday night. It says, Chicago police say they're investigating a video circulating on social media that shows several people beating a man, at a residence. Very generic reporting here. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said at a news conference Wednesday that four suspects are in custody. Formal charges have not been filed. Johnson says the victim, who has mental health challenges, is recovering. He called the video sickening and so on. I just played that clip for you. It says officers were called to a residence on the city's west side Tuesday evening, where they found signs of a struggle and damaged property. Videos of the alleged incident were posted on social media. This is the Associated Press writing its initial coverage of this attack. Videos of the alleged incident were posted on social media. Police say that it's too soon to make a determination if the attack was racially motivated. It's too soon to make that determination. It says, note that that's the end of the report. But here they just touch on the fact that it could have been racially motivated at the end of an article where the race of neither the victim nor the perpetrators is even mentioned. Yesterday, even coming out of the White House, Josh Earnest, he said it was too early to tell if the suspects committed a hate crime. Now, in an interview with CBS, President Obama, to his credit, at least called this brutal attack a hate crime. But then in this exchange, the CBS interviewer said that, well, look at race relations in the United States. Surely you must be disappointed how that in the past 8 years, race relations have gotten worse. Here's a little tidbit from that exchange on a CBS interview. This is with a reporter and President Barack Obama.
Among the many accomplishments you've had, the one that's been frustrating, I'm sure, to you is race relations. They've gotten worse, especially in Chicago. Laquan McDonald, two recent racially motivated attacks, one this week caught on Facebook Live. Yeah. That's got to be terribly disappointing to you of all the things you wanted to do with race relations.
Yeah, Jay, here's how I think about it. I don't think it's accurate to say race relations have gotten worse. Listen, I came to Chicago in 85. You were there during council wars.
Right. Yeah,
okay. I promise you, race relations haven't gotten worse. But what is true is that in part because we see visuals of racial tensions, violence, and so forth, because of smartphones and the internet and the media, what we've seen is surfacing, I think, a lot of the problems that have been there a long time.
So race relations haven't gotten any worse. It's just basically social media, smartphones, the newer technologies that make it possible for us to see more of these crimes. It hasn't gotten worse. The implication being, of course, that things have gotten better. Everything's improved. Never mind what we're seeing. Never mind the statistics that the Chicago police are reporting. They had 762 homicides in Chicago last year. Last year. That's worse. I think I heard this report correctly. It's worse than or more than putting Los Angeles and New York together combined. That's what's happening in Chicago. That's where President Obama spent much of his early years, his early career as a community organizer, and then as a politician there in Chicago. Last year in Chicago alone, there were 3,550 shootings. There were 4,331 shooting victims. And this is coming out of a city, by the way, that has some of the strictest gun laws in America. And look at these exploding crises. If you go back a year, 2015, there were 480 murders, which is horrific in itself. But to go from 480 to 762 in 1 year, that's the kind of craziness that just goes on in one of America's biggest cities. It's an epidemic. All of this hate, all of this violence, all of this division, all of this racial strife and division. And President Obama and everyone else in his administration steadfastly maintaining that, hey, it's better now. Everything's better than it once was. And don't let the fact that everybody can capture a little video on a phone these days, don't let that make you think that it's actually getting worse. It's not. Well, it is getting worse. And what you're seeing is happening. Never mind what the Associated Press does to try to downplay the significance of an atrocity such as this, as several conservative media outlets have noted. You reverse the races. You make it four white people that are attacking or torturing a young black man. And they'd very quickly conclude that this was a hate crime, and the federal authorities, forget about the Chicago police, but the federal authorities would be involved in this immediately. And it's no wonder there's been such a backlash this past year against the major media, against the Democratic Party. This other piece here, this is coming out of the Times of London, but it's about the Obama administration going forward to release 19 Guantanamo prisoners. That prison, by the way, it's been whittled down to 59 prisoners that are left. I think the president came into office back in 2009. There were 242 prisoners, and he's whittled it down to 59, and he wants to release 19 more by January 20th. He wants to release 19 more before President Trump is in office. And so plans are in place to move them out. I forget the names of the countries. Italy was one of them, in fact, and then two Middle Eastern countries. Donald Trump has said he's going to keep the prison open, and he's going to fill it up with these hardened criminals, these terrorists that are trying to kill Americans. And then we've reported this stat to you before, this report that came out in September of last year, that 122 of the 693 inmates that have been released from Guantanamo have returned back to the battlefield. They're carrying on with the fight against the West, against America and Israel primarily. 122 out of 693. And so many of them have actually killed Americans in Afghanistan and elsewhere. Another, what should be anyway, scandalous report coming from the Washington Free Beacon. This has to do with Ben Rhodes, the top national security advisor for the Obama administration. He's there in the White House. He was largely responsible for creating the false narrative on the Iran nuke deal in order to fool Americans, in order to fool Congress. This piece from the Free Beacon, it notes that when President Obama was elected, when he was president-elect back in 2008, and then trying to get all of his aides and advisors the security status that they needed to help him, this article brings out how that Ben Rhodes' security was denied by the FBI. They declined his interim clearance status. Because of why? Well, the article has a few suggestions, but for whatever the reason, in 2008, late 2008, early 2009, the FBI said, no way are we giving security status to this individual, Ben Rhodes. It says here, Ben Rhodes, a White House deputy national security advisor who led the administration's efforts to mislead Congress about the terms of the Iran nuclear deal, is under scrutiny. In the wake of disclosures, he was declined interim clearance status by the FBI in 2008 when the administration was moving into the White House. Since that time, Rhodes has emerged as a key advisor to President Obama and a major player in the administration's efforts to create a self-described pro-Iran deal echo chamber, as he called it, to mislead Congress and Americans about the terms of the Iranian nuclear deal. So he created this echo chamber that was brought out again, what was it, last May from the New Yorker, where he just basically came out and bragged, yeah, we just created this echo chamber. And it was propped up on lies in order to get the deal through, whatever it takes to get the deal through. The Free Beacon says lawmakers are now concerned that Rhodes' access to the top levels of government, including its diplomacy with Iran, is inappropriate due to the FBI's concerns about his past. And so there's quotes in this piece from these lawmakers, I think one from Arizona, another one from Oklahoma, that wrote this letter of concern to FBI Director James Comey. Here comes Comey into the news again. These lawmakers wrote, "This previously unknown fact is extremely troubling and calls into question the integrity of the FBI's protocols and the wisdom of Mr. Rhodes's continued government employment." Okay, so if his clearance was turned down in 2008, well, what's happened since that time? And how has he been such a close advisor to the President of the United States? Well, this article talks about how or why someone could be denied this security clearance. And it could have to do with their criminal background, their criminal record, or maybe having a history of drug use. Or having questionable foreign ties or relationships. That also could be a reason why you lose your security status or why it's not granted in the first place. The Free Beacon says the latter possibility is raising concerns among lawmakers and veteran foreign policy insiders who say that Rhodes' history of promoting diplomacy with Iran may have been the reason for his disqualification. Well, Iran's the number one state sponsor of terror. The FBI must have thought back in 2008, and here he has all these close associations, and he's working so hard to reach out to Iran. That's dangerous. American officials would have thought back in 2008, that's dangerous that we give someone like this clearance. It says emails released as part of a hack on Obama administration confidant John Podesta confirm that Rhodes was not able to pass preliminary background checks by the FBI in 2008. And then it quotes from some of the Podesta emails, which one of them says that of the approximately 187 people that they were moving through this process back in 2008. These were aides and supporters of President Obama, that Ben Rhodes was the only person who was declined interim status. I mean, even that figure is pretty shocking given how many radicals this administration brought in with it. On the other hand, if everyone else passed, if everyone else was given clearance except for Ben Rhodes, what does that say about what the FBI learned about Ben Rhodes? The Free Beacon says the FBI was to complete a full review into Rhodes after the transition. It remains unclear what they concluded. Here's another scandal, in other words, that just sort of fell by the wayside. They wouldn't let him in to begin with. And then, well, he's one of the top aides to the president and eventually given security a clearance. And then what was to come of that? Or rather, what was to come of the first report or the first denial? It just falls by the wayside, and we carry on. Rhodes, an integral part of the president's inner circle, currently holds all relevant security clearances related to his leading role in the White House. And so there's no problem now. He has access to anything and everything. It says later on, and I believe this is quoting from, let me just back up. It says Franks and Bridenside expressed alarm, these are the two lawmakers, about Rhodes' initial rejection and are seeking further information from the FBI about what exactly disqualified Rhodes. And then it quotes them saying, "For the FBI to evidently find something in Mr. Rhodes' background that led it to potentially deny him a security clearance, only to have Mr. Rhodes work at the highest levels of the Obama administration, shakes the entire clearance process to the core." Mr. Rhodes was working at the White House for the past 7 years. He's been working for the past 7 years and is the architect of the Iran deal echo chamber. I mean, that's how he himself described it. Openly bragging that he fooled everyone. No wonder his access was denied in 2008. But what happened after that? Well, we don't know. Members of Congress are trying to get the FBI to give further information. They're trying to find out why or how he received security clearance later on in the process. And of course, most importantly, I think they're trying to find out if the Obama administration applied pressure on the FBI for Rhodes to get his security clearance. The Beacon says one veteran foreign policy operative in D.C. who's familiar with the matter said the clearance issues could be linked to Rhodes' longtime efforts to promote U.S.-Iran diplomacy. It says everyone knows that the push for Iran engagement as far as the Beltway elite are concerned began with the Iraq study group. Ben Rhodes wrote the report, said the source, who requested anonymity to speak freely. Who knows? Who knows who whispered those ideas into his ear? And so, as I say, yet another scandal. Yet another scandal we learn about just right here toward the end of this presidency. It's amazing, though, because when you hear from the president or his advisors, it's as if there's no problems, everything's gotten better, no scandals to speak of, or as Valerie Jarrett said on Sunday, nothing to even be embarrassed about. This is from an interview on CNN this past Sunday.
The president prides himself on the fact that his administration hasn't had a scandal and that he hasn't done anything to embarrass himself. But that's not because he's being someone other than who he is. That's because that's who he is. That's who they are. And I think that's what really resonates with the American people.
That's from Valerie Jarrett, another top advisor to President Obama. Some would say the top advisor, the one in some ways pulling the strings. No scandals, nothing to be embarrassed about. And of course, if you go right down the line with this president who has talked about having a pen and a phone to be able to do whatever he needs to do, irrespective of what Congress wants or doesn't want, all the laws that he's ignored, not deporting illegal immigrants, and all the government agencies that he's used to go after or to persecute political enemies, the IRS targeting conservative groups, targeting Tea Party groups, targeting pro-Israel groups, the Justice Department tapping phones, seizing records of more than 20 Associated Press phone lines, and then going after that Fox News reporter a few years ago. All the illegal surveillance programs, programs that even many prominent Democrats have criticized. And then, of course, the big cover-up over Benghazi. The cover-up, the lies, the change of the talking points. The White House refusing to reveal what the president was even doing on the night of the attack. Or following the attack, all of the lies by Susan Rice. 5 times on Sunday talk shows. And then after that, the fact that it took 8 months for Americans to finally hear testimony from someone who was actually on the ground in Libya, either in Benghazi or Tripoli. And then the truth that emerged, that there was one warning sign after another, that there were cries for help that went unanswered, that it wasn't a YouTube video after all. Here more recently, you have all the, well, I guess if you go back a few years too, just with respect to Obamacare, it seems almost petty compared to some of these other things, but all the lies associated with that. If you can, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. But I was going to say more recently, the email server scandal with Mrs. Clinton, not just when she was a private citizen, but the one she used when she was Secretary of State. And then the pay-to-play favors. We learned this past year of President Obama's, the Obama administration's interference in Benjamin Netanyahu's re-election bid. There's a story about government interference in presidential elections or prime minister elections. And then getting back to Ben Rhodes here, the entire narrative set up in order to sell the Iran nuke deal. That's one of the most scandalous acts of all. My father wrote in 2013, I mean, this is somewhat dated now because it's 3 years old, but he asked in this article, why all of these scandals? Why are we seeing so many scandals? He says, as these scandals pile higher and higher, nobody can get administration officials to tell them anything. It's the most secretive, even though it came in promising transparency, but it's the most secretive presidential administration in history. He says they've lied and lied and lied. This is my father in 2013. They've been caught in their lies. This administration covers itself in a cloak of deceit. Anyone who says there isn't a real problem here needs to open his eyes. We have to see reality, my father said. Something deadly dangerous has seized the country, far more than what people realize. He says there's a spirit dimension or a spiritual dimension to what's happening, and you cannot understand these events unless you recognize that. Ultimately, it isn't about a man or an administration. It's about an evil spirit being who's working to destroy this nation and why God is allowing it to happen. That's what it's about. You have to understand or see that spiritual dimension. And of course, my father was writing about this in particular during the year 2013. I believe that's when the first version of America Under Attack was released, one of the more popular booklets we've produced. That booklet that discusses this evil spirit being, Revelation 12, he's been cast down. He's deceived the whole earth. He's confined to this earth. You look at all of these scandals. You look at what's happening to the United States. And you see Satan the devil's fingerprints. You see those fingerprints everywhere. Well, speaking of this powerful spirit being, speaking of this spiritual dimension, Victor Davis Hanson has an excellent piece, his latest from just the other day, Why the Anti-Israeli Sentiment. How do you explain this? This anti-Israeli sentiment. It says, why does the world, including now the U.S., the United States, single out liberal and lawful Israel, but refrain from chastising truly illiberal countries? He's referring, obviously, to America's attack on Israel using the United Nations with that resolution from a couple of weeks ago. And then the 70-minute diatribe aimed against Israel. Secretary of State John Kerry. Victor Davis Hanson says, Kerry has never sermonized for so long about his plan to solve the Syrian crisis that's led to some 500,000 deaths, or the vast migrant crisis that's nearly wrecked the European Union. He's never gotten up for 70 minutes about those issues. In fact, I saw an exchange with Secretary Kerry just the other day where a reporter said, look, isn't it much worse today because President Obama didn't hold to that red line? And Mr. Kerry basically said, well, we did, and it was Congress's fault. They didn't get behind it. We drew the red line, and it wasn't President Obama's fault. It never is. He's made everything better. And the reporter, just to paraphrase, came back and said, well, isn't it a lot worse in Syria, though? Well, yeah, but there's other factors involved here. It's never this administration's fault. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's no scandals. Nothing. It says no one in this administration has shown, this is Victor Davis Hanson, as much anger about the many thousands who have been killed and jailed in the Castro brothers' Cuba, much less about the current Stone Age conditions in Venezuela, or the nightmarish government of President Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines, an ally nation. President Obama did not champion the cause of the oppressed during the Green Revolution in 2009. Did Kerry and Obama become so outraged after Russia occupied South Ossetia, Crimea, and eastern Ukraine? It's a strong point. I mean, where were the 70-minute lectures with any of these developments? Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, was never so impassioned over the borders of Chinese-occupied Tibet or over Turkish-occupied northern Cyprus. In terms of hearkening back to the Palestinian refugee crisis that started in the late 1940s, no one talks today in similar fashion about the Jews who survived the Holocaust and walked home only to find that their houses in Eastern Europe were gone or occupied by others. No one sounded the alarm then. No one talked about a refugee crisis then. He says, much less do we recall the 11 million German civilians who were ethnically cleansed from Eastern Europe in 1945 by the Soviets and their imposed communist governments. Certainly, there are not still refugee camps outside Dresden for those people displaced from East Prussia 70 years ago. He says, more recently, again, this is coming from Victor Davis Hanson, an excellent historian who just helps to help us see it in perspective. Why so much animus toward Israel? Why so much hatred and hostility aimed at the little state of Israel? It says, more recently, few nations at the UN faulted the Kuwaiti government for the expulsion of 200,000 Palestinians after the liberation of Kuwait by coalition forces in 1991, yet on nearly every issue, from settlements to human rights to the status of women, UN members that routinely violate human rights target a liberal Israel. Little Israel is the target on nearly every issue. And he goes on to list off a lot of the reasons for which this is happening. One of them, he says, is just sheer cowardice. Israel's little. There's just, 7 or 8 million people there. It's obviously a tiny country. And probably the tone would be a lot different if Israel was this gigantic nation, geographically large, and had 100 million people or so. They're easy to pick on. Little Israel, even though they've got a powerful military force, still, they're easy to pick on. But then he picks up on something that, well, we've talked about ourselves a lot. But he doesn't get to the why of it. Mr. Hanson, as excellent as this analysis is, he says, but partly the source of anti-Israelism is ancient anti-Semitism. He says, if Israelis were Egyptians administering Gaza or Jordanians running the West Bank as during the 1960s, no one would care. The world's problem is that Israelis are Jews. That's the problem. The hatred for Jews. And he's right about that. But why is there so much hatred aimed at Jews? That's the thing. That's what no one but God's church understands. He says, thus Israel earns negative scrutiny that is never extended commensurately to others. Everybody piles on little Israel. And so much of it boils down to a hatred for Jews. But why? Why anti-Semitism, as my father asks in chapter 8 of his booklet, The Key of David? Why so much hatred? Why so much hatred for the Jews? Well, going back to this spiritual dimension, Revelation 12:9, as I mentioned earlier, how that Satan, as the god of this world, has deceived the whole world. He's deceived the whole world. That's the being, that great powerful being that hates not just Jews, he hates all human beings. He hates all of humanity. And of course, when you look at Bible prophecy, speaking of the Jews, or more broadly, speaking of the nations of Israel, the scriptures bring out the fact that God is going to one day unite the nations of Israel, and then ultimately the whole world under the throne of David, the Jewish king. You can see that prophecy in Jeremiah 33. Or if you look at Romans 11, it talks about the Gentile nations of the world being grafted into Israel. Little Israel. Or that throne of David, the Jewish king. And of course, Jesus Christ, who's going to rule from that throne. He's called the Lion of the tribe of Judah. In Revelation 5, he's the root of David. And so the Bible in the Gospels talks about salvation being of the Jews. It's of the Jews. That's where it starts, but it expands out to all nations. Paul said to his assistant Timothy that God would have all men saved. That's what's coming. People of every nation and every race becoming a spiritual Jew, which has absolutely nothing to do with physical race. Spiritual Jews, the family of God, that's your future. And it's Satan's hatred for that precious truth that fuels all of this hatred for the Jewish race today. That's why anti-Semitism. That's why you see so much hatred aimed at Israel. And of course, this is something that we write about and speak about often. My father gave a Key of David program, I guess this would be December 2015, so a little over a year ago. And here's what he had to say. He's talking in particular about the hatred that Adolf Hitler had for the Jews back during the World War II period. This is my father from December 2015.
Now, let me read you an amazing statement here from our booklet on the Germany in prophecy. Hitler considered the Jew to be the devil personified. But we wrote, in truth, the Jews have been specially commissioned to preserve the oracles of God. Romans 3, verses 1 through 3, the oracles include the sacred calendar, knowledge of the biblical week, including the seventh-day Sabbath, and the Old Testament scriptures. So, when you stop and think about that, now he thinks the Jews are the devil personified, and yet God has commissioned them to do something, not because they're favorite people, but because God wanted them to help bring humanity to God. And they and other nations of Israel have not done that job well at all. But look, if you understand this, that you can see that it's not the Jews that Hitler hated most of all. It was God and what God is doing. It was God's word. And yet, that's exactly what Satan the devil hates and has tried to cast to the ground time and time again and has succeeded just only as God would allow them. But look, there's just so many things that Hitler showed to us that we ought to know more about this history. I mean, this is recent history. It's not like it's ancient history. This was World War II.
Fairly recent history. And history, of course, is repeating itself. You see that same spiritual dimension. And what was it that Satan was inspiring his instrument in World War II to go after most of all? It was God and what God is doing. It's God's word. It's God's truth that Satan hates. And the Jews are, of course, as my father brings out in the Key of David, they're a type of what all men are to become spiritually. Salvation's of the Jews. That doesn't mean he's playing favorites. It means that we're all going to be spiritual Jews. That's your future. and mine, no matter what our skin, our physical skin looks like. In the booklet, my father says, most people who hate the Jews don't even know why they do. Can we see Satan behind such lies and hatred? Well, he goes on to say that as much as Satan hates physical Jews, his hatred is that much more intense for spiritual Jews. He's going after those whose minds have been open to the truth, which is why we've got to be on guard and constantly vigilant to fight against our adversary, the devil. Because he's come down unto you, as it says in Revelation 12. He's going after you. There's a great spiritual war going on. Ephesians 6 brings this out in some detail. I'll just have to leave off there and let you study that further. But go back and look at, I believe it's chapter 8 from the Key of David booklet, Satan's Great Wrath, and understand why anti-Semitism. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. And when we come back, we'll finally catch up on some of the emails that have been stacking up over the last couple of weeks. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Did it ever strike you as most unusual that the great God should have raised up the ancient nation Israel to be his chosen people? Consider these seemingly paradoxical facts. God says he is not a respecter of persons. Is he then a respecter of nations? Does he have a favorite? Did you ever realize that God denied his chosen people salvation, save only their prophets? That the chosen nation was given only material and national promises? That God's Holy Spirit was inaccessible to them? The Holy Bible is indeed a book that is primarily about one people, the people of Israel. But why? This astounding truth is a mystery totally unknown by any religion, by Christianity, by even Judaism. It is thoroughly explained in this book, Mystery of the Ages. It is an intriguing story. The mystery of Israel has great significance in God's purpose for all peoples. One cannot understand the real purpose and incredible potential of man without this vital knowledge. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And welcome back to the program, our brand new monitor here in the studio. It also has a beautiful American flag. It gives the Oklahoma City time, 7:46, as it is right now. Of course, it's on here in the Midlands, live at 1 p.m. In the afternoon. A few of you listeners commented while I was in Edmond just how much more grovelly my voice sounded. Early in the morning, 7 a.m., it was rough getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning to get ready for the first show, and it is true that after a long day of speaking, I do speak a lot with lectures and such, that sometimes in the morning, the old voice can be especially low. So I'm back to my afternoon live programs, and hopefully my voice won't be quite so low. In any event, lots of emails that have come in this week, and we haven't really gone through much in the last couple of weeks, so we'll see how much progress we can make here. This one first came in from Texas, the first one here. It says, thank you for a wonderful program Wednesday morning, and I hope and pray you and your family travel safe, or that your travel is safe and quick and comfortable. This is talking about coming back to Edstone, obviously, and that you're able to hit the ground running like never before when you return to Edstone. Please thank Mr. McDonald for his fascinating presentation. That's referring to Brad McDonald's program, filling in on Tuesday's show. This one here, a more general response from New Zealand. It says, great radio station in a world full of deception, a world full, or rather ruled, by the dangerous deeds of the spirit of disobedience. This truly is another voice crying out in the wilderness. We must continue to be strong in the knowledge of the coming kingdom of heaven. This one here comes in response to Monday's program, the one where we played a couple of clips from Widow's Might, Ryan Malone's latest musical. We had that for you on Monday, and then some lecturing after that, or a Bible study on Naomi, and the admonition she gave to Ruth to make sure that she counts the cost first. And this listener says here, great start to the week and to the year on the Trumpet Daily. Another one from California, also in response to that program about Ruth. It says, thank you for the radio show on Naomi and Ruth. It really added to the whole experience of watching the show, hearing you expounding on the meaning of many of the lessons these ladies encountered. That program, or rather that musical, was made available around the world on a live stream. And so I know many of you out there who were not able to attend the live performance in Edmond, that you were able to see it online, as many of them did right here at Edstone on Sunday night. It says here, again, this is from California, I have been reading an article on the PCOG site or website titled The Tree of Life and God's House, written by your father, Gerald Fleury, in 2005. At that time, God's auditorium had not been built. And Mr. Fleury stated, what an opportunity to build God's house. What a blessing, what an honor that God has given only to a very few in human history. And then she goes on to say, what a true honor it is. Now we can look back and realize what a huge blessing it is to us all to see God's house and the immense fruit that now comes from it. The music and productions are like nothing else in this world. They literally bring the Bible to life. Thank you so much for the daily show. Please keep up the good work. It really is a joy to listen to you and the thoughts of other listeners, too. So here's another one that enjoys hearing this listener feedback. And, of course, she had some wonderful things also to say about the musical and the message and just the fact that it's coming out of God's house, and referring back to that comment by my father, 2005, that's almost 12 years ago now, where we hadn't even broken ground on the auditorium yet. And yet, what an opportunity, what a blessing to be associated with that construction project. And then to think about all of the messages coming out of that house today, all of the music, all of that fine, godly culture. Another one responding to the program on Ruth, Monday. It says, first program of the year, and had to get this email out to you before the program was even over. What a way to start the year, 2017, by counting the cost in the Book of Ruth. Outstanding start. Thank you again. This program really gets me excited for what's ahead in 2017. Indeed, this is going to be a spectacular year. Already, you can see where this is headed. We've seen so many prophecies unfolding before our eyes, and so many opportunities, so many exciting opportunities for the work. What a year 2017 will be. Another one here from Missouri says, thank you so very much for expounding on the latest and most inspiring musical, The Widow's Mite by Ryan Malone. This is such a glorious message from God's Word. Every verse is the journey of our greatest choice to follow our Father and His church through any and every trial. I've always loved the story of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. Having the opportunity to see this has given me the encouragement to continue as He has called us for His purpose and to remain faithful to the end. Thank you again for taking it a step further by pointing us back to God's message straight from the Bible. And of course, that's the beauty of that wonderful musical, is it's all based on the narrative, the true narrative, that's right there in the inspired Word of God. I mean, there's some details in every story that we don't know all of it. I mean, sometimes there's events over the course of several years that are recorded in just one Bible verse. But the framework is there. God gives us the truth. And if a righteous performer or someone who's grounded in the Word of God can come along and compose something that then adds some color here and there, what a beautiful message it can be. Inspiring, uplifting. And all of it, of course, based on truth. Another one here, it says, a most brilliant way to teach on counting the cost. I'm so inspired. The beauty of this musical is stunning. I've not ever regretted answering the calling from the Most High Eternal Father. What a rich, rewarding life I'm living. Yes, there are trials. There are tests and failings on my part, but he has always restored my spirit. Thanks to all involved in this God-inspired production. What a way to teach. What a way to teach. And here again, all of that's performed on the stage of God's house. Something my father was writing about back in 2005. If God gives us that opportunity, what a blessing, what an honor. And look at the message now that goes out from that stage. Another one here says, good program today. Prophecy is good, but you always need to cover this subject. Or you also need to cover this subject. Maybe it will counteract some of the misinformation and deceit in the religious world, this subject of counting the cost. Another one here in response to Monday's show. It says, thank you for bringing the stage of the widow's mite closer to us out here in the field, while these lessons of counting the cost are ever before us. It says, the cost of following our husband is incalculable, and neither should we ever limit any expenditure on him. There was no limit on what God did give for us, and so we ought to give every bit of ourselves to him. Although no matter how much of us there is to give, our totality is even so insufficient to even make up for an iota of what he has done for us. God's gift, it says, is priceless. God's gift is priceless. This one here comes in response to, I believe this was Wednesday's show, the Agitator-in-Chief, Merkel's toughest test, and then the rise of Bavaria. It says, it can be no more obvious that this country full of people at each other's throats and shooting its own police officers is a country already divided and has only just been primed to go off on Donald Trump to the fuller. Is it only leadership of a burning ship that Donald Trump has won? Just what is left for Mr. Trump's protectionist policies to even protect? If we cannot even protect our own citizens, now under such a lawless new American order of division within, how can we protect what is left from the vultures without? It says further, an overturning Germany, overturning to a new leadership, as an old beast turns over in its disturbed sleep, has been indirectly agitated by the setup of an upset new world order, minus one torn superpower. What the people of Germany have been stirring over has been what the government has been trying to suppress and not further agitate. It was not from any prompting of division among people, but rather policies that tried too hard to push unlike peoples together that are causing upheaval in Germany. It says finally, from Merkel's open arms to a Germany up in arms was not the intended result. This one here comes in response to, I think this was last Friday's show, the year the wheels came off. It says, between this broadcast and the latest Key of David program, I am in awe. As Mr. Fleury mentioned in the Key of David program, he believes God wants the people to choose between those two Great Again booklets. That's referring to his Great Again program. You can view that program at thetrumpet.com, by the way. It's been up there now 2 or 3 weeks. But it says here, ready to exercise the faith of Christ, trusting in his unbreakable promises. As you said in a recent program, it all hinges on our devotion to our prayer life. The need for daily heart-rending prayer is more urgent than the 10-minute introduction to this program because it's building. It's about building his spiritual temple. That's a reference to the 10-minute montage that we had at the start of that radio program. We produced a TV program, by the way, using a smaller version of that montage. We just completed that on Wednesday and submitted that to be played here in the UK, not this weekend, but next weekend. So we'll let you know a little bit later just how that one performs. Well, that last listener also references there the importance of being devoted to our prayer lives, and I won't have time to read through many of them, but we got quite a few responses to that show we did on the Daily Pilgrimage from a little over a week ago. It says, after sitting with you again this past hour, I am again spurred on to keep keeping on. I hope that you will just keep talking and teaching and writing and voicing constantly and encouraging us in our prayer life. It says, please do not stop. I know and realize and understand the words and the lectures and the teaching, but it is that prayer rock that I have not found yet. Well, not to the extent that that he wants to. In any event, I'll cut it short there. Since we are out of time, we bring you to the end of another week of programming, this time again from the new and improved Ed Stone Studio. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week. We'll see you next week.